Good morning. I know Wilma said we have all the time in the world, but I about had enough church for this Sunday, so I invite you all back next week. I'm sure the church will be open and you can hear what I have to say. When I was asked to talk about the summer theme of the mundane to the sacred, Kim Stuckey, who convinced me to do this, said, "But you have so many good stories." And while I do admit to having lots of stories, and sometimes Bev says I'm like my father, whose stories have no beginning and have no end and have no point. I thought it would be relatively hard to make them fit the theme of the morning. And it also didn't help my confidence when Wilma sent me emails requesting what scriptures I wanted for this morning and what special song I wanted to sing. This sort of thing I don't really think about. I'm grateful for those that do in this world. However, I will say that whoever picked the last hymn we sang, "My Shepherd Will Supply My Need," picked one of my absolute favorite hymns, and I thank you so much for that. So I will try to tie a few things together and kind of connect with this theme of the mundane to the sacred. And I feel to begin with, I'll give you a little bit of history. I've always been a finder and a fixer of things, and I grew up on a farm in Kansas, and we didn't have a lot of extras. Our equipment was always at least secondhand, and breakdowns were always expected instead of like, it'd be nice once to get through harvest without breaking down, but they were accepted instead of the exception. And I soon learned that you grease everything, you don't run it too hard, and then you pray you get through. Just like I'm praying I get through without choking up here a little bit. When I was small, my favorite place to visit was the mechanic shop that my dad used and was run by his friend. My father is not a natural fix-it man, so we relied on a mechanic for many years until my brothers and I would take over the repair duties of the farm. My father's mechanic, he drove an old Studebaker truck that it had, you know, like the cobbler's children have no shoes. That was our mechanic's pickup. He had a really rich singing voice. And he loved his adopted nephew as his son after losing his own wife and children in a car accident. As a child, he was my hero, and I wanted to be a mechanic just like him. My second largest influence in life was my grade school and high school band director, who not only constantly advised us to blow that horn, He was also my woodshop teacher. Mr. Taves asked me to help him working after school repairing on his rental houses, which is one of my first experiences with, fixing homes, to be honest, and working in his restoration shop. He exemplified patience and getting things done correctly. He was the first man I proudly demonstrated my fuzzy high-power Krako car stereo system, too, that I had worked so hard to install in my first car. I can only imagine what he thought about my loud system, because loud was where it was at. I did have a 5-bar equalizer in my car, which I thought was cool. My final important mentor was a fun-loving, loud, Italian-American, World War II veteran who smoked Swisher Sweet cigarillos all day long. Armin Vigneron was a salesman who could sell snow to Eskimos. His motto was, you never know how far a frog will jump. Me? He would. He'd come in the shop and say, well, you never know how far a frog will jump. So if you can't quite figure out what that means to a salesman is that you don't know what people will want to buy from you, so you have to present them everything and let them make the choice. He was a perfectionist who pushed me further in my skills. I still remember the day he rejected a countertop that I was working on, and I had to do the whole thing over again, and the cost of the materials was deducted from my pay. Now, this was a pretty harsh lesson, but he was also the type of guy who loved people, and he loved having a good time. And he taught me that you don't have to be serious all the time to succeed in business. And that's pretty valuable advice. The value of my good mentors can never be underestimated. All my mentors saw my natural interests and encouraged me by answering my questions, demonstrating their skills, and pushing me to always try to do my best. Now, I will readily admit that I am not a perfectionist. I have experienced sacred moments when something turns out absolutely perfect. But for me, I'm usually paid to get something done as opposed to getting something perfect. I doubt that Stradivari started out wanting to make a perfect violin. I'm certain that he just wanted to make a good one. And after many, many violins, his became the best. In the book Outliers, Malcolm Gladwell states that in order to become an expert at something, you need to have practiced it at least for 10,000 hours. He gives the examples of athletes, musicians, computer programmers, and more. All these people we recognize as geniuses in their field, but are ones who have simply put in at least 10,000 hours to refine their craft. One of his best examples is the Beatles, who spent years and accumulated over 10,000 hours in Germany performing daily shows before finally striking it big with their first hit. Now, I cannot think of a single thing that I've ever spent that kind of time on, but I have done many, many things more than once. My sacred moments come when I fix something that has been long broken, or when I help someone in a small way with a seemingly minor but sometimes significant improvement. You all know the three-way switch, that you have to have one switch up for the other one to work. The refrigerator door that has swung against the wall of the kitchen instead of opening out to the cabinetry. The shower that just trickles hot water but then gives a full dose of cold water. And this is for a couple people at assembly. The stubborn leaking roof and skylights. You know who you are. And this is from my La Casa days. The rocking or leaning toilet supported solely by a couple of phone books. It's these small quality of life issues that usually give me the greatest joy. Someone once called me the king of the little stuff. We're a multi-age audience, and we are in church this morning. While everybody loves the big job, I'll take that comment as a compliment. I hate seeing things destroyed. I don't like most new homes. Dana's here, so I like the ones that he builds. And I resist throwing useful things away. Sometimes that hinders me in what I have to do. I have to destroy to make changes. I also love to build new things. And sometimes I simply have to toss useful items. Like all things in life, there is a balance. If everyone preserved, restored, and didn't throw anything away, we might still be living in caves and using stone tools. I have to remember that, like it or not, change and innovation requires destruction. The Habitat Restore has been a great lifter of my burden to destroy and throw away. Yes, this is a shameless plug for the Habitat Restore. I am a frequent contributor and purchaser of items that I use for homes. I see this as a way not as just saving money, but also as a way to care for the earth by continuing to use an item that could have been thrown away. I delight in being able to reuse something that I've taken out of someone else's home. Now, unfortunately, as my wife can attest, my garage too often becomes the repository of some of these items before I can find a useful home for them. In conclusion, even though I have jobs and I have days that I dread because of the task that's in front of me that day, I realize that if there were no challenges in life, there would be no joy in bringing something old or something renovated to new use. And in tying to this, I don't believe the sacred can be planned for. The sacred moments that I experience arrive as a special gift during the course of a mundane day. All I have to do is to be able to recognize them when they happen. My prayer is that we all will have the ability to recognize the sacred moment in the midst of our normal, everyday lives.